Well, that's the unmistakable sound of one of the hits of Dr. Hook. Dr. Hook, of course, I believe that the lead singer of that band, who I'm about to speak to, was the voice of a generation in terms of sort of middle of the road. I hate saying MOR because they weren't really such an MOR looking band, but they had enormous success worldwide, including Australia. And I am delighted to welcome one of my favourite singers. Never spoken to him before, never met him before, but he's Dennis Le Courier. Good evening, Dennis.
How are you, Mike? You make me sound so elusive, you know. It's nice. It's really interesting. I'm in an interesting point in my life right now because I have the luxury of looking back on what it is I actually did, you know.
You can still remember
really
it, Dennis?
True. It's really true, man, because when you're doing it, you're just doing it. I mean, you know, you have a hit record, and then you think, oh, now we have to have another one. And you don't really ever stop to look back. You just roll on. And then later on in life, you know, when that Timeless album came out a few years ago, it did really, really well. And I put that album together for Universal, and I had to listen to everything we recorded. Mm. So that was all in my head again. Mm. And then I went out and I did promotion for it, and I met so many people that had these great stories about how this music figured into their lives. And man, I promise you, that's not why you're doing it. I'm never in a studio singing a song hoping I save someone's life. I'm just trying to sing, you know, and later on you find out these great things.
And have a bit of fun. And I remember in the days when you used to come to Melbourne very regularly on the Don Lane show, which you, you remember, it did seem that you were trying to prove the adage, you know, you can't have too much fun, because you were, and the band, so full of laughter, so full of joy. It wasn't just the music. I think the image, too, it seemed pretty genuine to me, but it just seemed like you were having a ball.
And I'll tell you what, Australia was maybe the most, well, certainly one of the most receptive parts of the world, territories for that. I mean, that, you know, that we could be that, and people would go, yeah, we like that. I mean, Don Lane used to hold the show. Mm. Ray and I used to go on the Don Lane show and not even sing.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, one time I went on there dressed as my grandmother. I don't know if anybody remembers that, because we've been on there so many times we thought, oh, it's boring to just go sing again. You know, so everybody took us to heart, and I feel that way now about Australia. I feel like, and this may sound, you know, like I'm being Mr. Showbiz, but I really feel like when I'm in Australia and I'm dealing with the audiences and the media and everybody, I really feel like people take me at face value, you know what I mean? And as a person, I have always felt like I had a personal relationship with Australia. And that's the people. That was you guys that made us feel and made me feel that way, you know?
Well, that's lovely, Dennis. And I think it's a mutual thing. I think music is, well, I often call it the only true international language of peace. But it's supposed to be joy. And if you're spreading the joy, if you're having fun doing it, I'm a musician myself. I still work constantly as a musician, and I've traveled a lot over the years. I've managed a lot of people, and some of the people I've been involved with see it really as a chore. It's hard. We all know it's hard work touring, but you've got to make the most of it, and you certainly did. Now, tell me, you've got this tour coming up in Australia. You're doing Darwin, Sydney, Caloundra, the Gold Coast, and Perth. So you're travelling the length of breadth. And I want to get
And I'll tell you what. When we were here a little over 2 years ago, we did a longer tour than that, and it did really well. And this time we've been asked to come back. You know, I'm going to flatter myself here, but we've been asked to come back by popular demand.
Oh, well, that's
wonderful. And, you know, when somebody asks you, would you come back by popular demand, how big a fool do you have to be to say no thanks, you know? So we didn't have a whole lot of time in the schedule, but we wanted to come down right now, say hello, we'll be back, you know what I mean, but come down and do these dates. And, you know, it's really...
And I want
it's
to give
cool
out
to have that kind of thing, that kind of connection.
Sure is. And look, you must know your way around here by now, but I just want to give the date out for Melbourne because it's important. It's May 28th, so our listeners have got plenty of time to book. It'll be a fantastic show. You'll be hearing, in my opinion, one of the great voices of all time, along with some of... There's probably half a dozen of the what I consider to be the great rock and pop voices of all time, and Dennis owns one of them.
Thank you.
It's Melbourne Hamer Hall, and Ticketmaster are the booking agents, ticketmaster.com.au, and that's on May 28. Of all those hits, which, see, it sounds easy. You make it sound easy. You have a hit, and then you do another one and make that a hit.
It's not that easy. Believe me, there were songs in between those hits that nobody... cared about it all.
I have a favourite. I still, I'm not quite sure the title, but When Your Body's Had Enough of Me.
A little bit more. A little bit more. That was a big one. That was not a song that Shel Silverstein wrote, but it was a song that Shel Silverstein found on an album in a flea market by the guy who wrote it, a fellow named Bobby Gosch. And Shel went, hey, I'll give you a perfect example of a good song that nobody even knows about. And he pointed that song in our direction, and, we recorded it.
Well, he was talented in his own right, wasn't he, Shel Silverstein?
Shel was an interesting guy. He was an interesting guy to know for a lot of reasons, but he was genuine. He was really a genuine writer. He would write things for the sake of writing it. You know what I mean? Even if he threw it over in the corner, everything didn't have to be a commercial success. He was a good guy to work with, a very integral guy. He taught you a lot in that. He was also the kind of guy, though, that you'd be hanging around with him at a party and you'd say, hey, I'll be right back, and you'd see him 6 months later.
I've heard that. Other people have told me that,
Shel was an interesting guy. We got, after Hook, I didn't see Shel for about 7 years, and one day I just got my phone rang, and I picked up my phone in Nashville, and was like, hey, Dan, how you doing, man? And I said, wow, Shel. And he said, you're making some music? I said, not really, because I wasn't at that point. I was a little out to sea on what I wanted to do. Mm. And I went down to see him in Key West, and he sang me a bunch of songs and blew me away, and I sang him things that I was writing on. He was always a very generous guy, Shel. He'd make a few suggestions, but he was a very generous guy that way, as far as songwriting and being complimentary. And I don't mean blowing smoke complimentary. I mean really telling you why. I'll tell you if you got a second here. Because I hadn't seen him for such a long time, and because he had so many songs he wanted to play me, he sang this one. He sang a bunch to me that blew me away, but he sang this one song to me that really stunned me. And I said, Shel, that's brilliant. And he said, well, here, do me a favor, Dan. And he turned his notepad around and he handed me his guitar and he said, sing it to me. And so I kind of, Shel, pretty basic melody guy, so I kind of figured my way around that, and I read the words, and I sang the song back to him. And when I was done, he looked at me and he said, damn, that is a good song. And I thought, what a great place for me to be in, that I have to sing this guy back his own brilliant material so that a familiar voice, okay, that is a good song. I thought, what a wonderful place for me to be, in my own life, creatively, that I have to sing this guy his own material for him to acknowledge how good it is,
Well, I always say that the definition of a great singer, a good singer and a great singer, the difference is a great singer, you know who that singer is within about two bars of hearing them, because it's their interpretation, it's how they interpret. And obviously that's what he was doing, was looking for your interpretation of his lyrics and his basic melody.
Oh, yeah, man. I was a kid when I met Shel. I was about 19 to 20 years old, and
I was
already a fan of his material. And there was something I just got about his material, Sylvia's Mother, that it wasn't just a kid in a phone booth, because it started off with him kind of hopeful, saying, hey, can I talk to her? And by the end, he was suicidal.
What was her name again?
Get that opportunity,
Please, Mrs. What was her name?
Avery.
Avery.
A-V-E-R-Y.
That's great. That's great. But one of your earliest hits was actually a cover, so you weren't really worried about, you know, being all original material. You just did the songs that suited. And I'm talking, of course, about Walk Right In, which is the name of this this tour that you're doing in Australia. And that's going back pretty early, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And one earlier than that, Only 16, was a cover.
Yeah. That's right, it was, yeah. Song.
And, you know, and the reason we did that was because one night I was on stage by myself. The band wandered off, and I was up there, and I sang that song because I'm a Sam Cooke fan. And people seemed to like it, and we recorded it. And, you know, it was a hit. I mean, so you never know where any of it's going to come from. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't get too precious about it, and we were lucky. We picked or found or wrote or whatever a lot of songs that people have taken to heart, you know, and they pass them on to their children and their children's children. I know by my audiences now, Mike, my audiences now are the original fans and their kids and their kids and sometimes their kids. You know, and it's a good argument for looking back on what I did and thinking, yeah, okay, that was pretty cool. Because if that first generation of fans took it to heart enough to pass it on, and then they passed it on, and I'm coming down there in 2 months. something's okay.
Well, the last live album you did was in fact called Post Cool Live. I think it's the last one.
I had an album out. I have 3 solo albums that I released, and one of them, my last one, was Post Cool. And then the same band that recorded the album went out and did the tour, and we did a DVD of it. You know, I probably have been involved in about 3 or 4 DVDs, and I have to tell you the truth, man, I've never seen a single frame of any of it, because the only thing I have ever learned by watching myself is don't.
Well,
don't
I saw
do it. No, it's really true, man, because you start seeing these things like, oh, I didn't know that's what I was doing with my nose when I sang that. You know what I mean? And then every time you're on stage, instead of singing the song, you're thinking about your damn nose.
I know. If I get a glimpse every now and again, the old cliche of the guy throwing the brick at the television, I'm tempted to throw the brick at them.
Right. I hate it. No, I can't watch. Yeah, you know, even when I was young and cute, I was never that... I was never that enamored with watching myself, because it freezes it somewhere in your head, and you have to do it every night. Mm. And, you know, there's 2 things you can never do on stage, and anybody who's a musician will understand this, but I think anybody can apply this themselves. When you're on stage, you cannot take a second to congratulate yourself or chastise yourself. So, in other words, if you sing a bum note, and you go, oh, that was a bum note, the next one's going to stink too, because you're still thinking about the last one. And it also applies that if you do something and you think, oh, that was pretty good, the next thing you do stinks.
Yeah, that's so true.
You're too busy patting yourself on the back.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, it's an interesting thing, because I know exactly what you're talking about, but you're there really, and I often say this to the band before we go in, and I'm sure you've done it, we're there to entertain, not to educate. If we have to stop the song every 30 seconds because someone plays artists that are fastidious that the band look terrified of them. I mean, I like
man,
it to go right, and I know you do.
Man, you got to be in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
The band I have now, today's Dr. Hook, is a bunch of brilliant musicians and singers that, you know, the criteria was, let's do this music the way people remember it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is what they said they took to heart.
Yes.
So, and you know, it's funny because all the songs you mentioned a little bit more, and Walk Right In, we talked about Sylvia's Mother and Only 16, these were all songs that at one point was a new song, and we were out promoting that. I was out there trying to get people to play it on the radio, hoping people would buy it. But these days, I know people like these songs. So what my job has become now is to make sure that the band plays this stuff the way people remember it and want to hear it. and that I sing. So today, I don't need to promote this stuff. I need to represent it well.
Well said. Yeah, that's a very good point. Dennis, I'm going to give the show, this will be a fantastic, I'm actually going to try and come along myself because I know I'm
free on that date.
I normally work on those dates, but it's in Melbourne at Hamer Hall. And the bookings are through.
Venue.
It's a lovely venue, great acoustics. Ticketmaster.com.au. Dennis, thank you for speaking to us. It's been wonderful to speak to you in person. I've followed your career for a long time. I've been a fan. I think I was a member of Doctor Hook at one stage or other in my head.
Hey, man, I'll tell you what, I'm like that about the Beatles. If you came to where I live and looked around, you'd think, oh, so he used to be in the Beatles? Which one was he? No, that's cool. That's really nice of you to say, man. And everything I said, I really mean. I mean, Australia's been, you know, it's a long trip.
Yes.
It's a long trip to get there, and there's a lot of traveling just to get everywhere, you know, because
yes.
It's a big country. But see, the deal is, if you still like the reason you're doing it, you know, because 20 hours a day or 21 and a half hours a day, I'm sitting somewhere in a car, on a motorway, in a dressing room, in a hotel, waiting for the chance to be fabulous.
but you're still getting the thrill from it, and I can still hear that in your voice.
But the day that goes away, then I'm just riding around looking for bad food, you know?
Like fat burgers or something like that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate your time, and, you know, I'll see you guys soon. We're on our way, virtually on our way.
Looking forward to it. Hope we get a chance to speak then, too. Thank you, Dennis. Dennis Le Corrier, Dr. Hook, of course. Touring, and one more time, Darwin, if you're up that way, at Sky City on May 26, Melbourne, May 28 at Hamer Hall, Sydney State Theatre, Caloundra Event Centre, that's on June 1st, June 2nd, Gold Coast, June 4th, Perth Crown Theatre, and Ticketmaster are the booking agent, ticketmaster.com. And we'll go up to the break with one of the huge hits of Dr. Hook, and remember, there are about 20 of them, so it's pretty hard to miss.
When your body's had enough of me and I'm laying flat out on the floor,